Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects, but there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few taps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
Professional welder Shayna Ford used VR training developed by ForgeFX to hone her skills as a welder.
The more time that you spend practicing it, that's what separates a good welder from a great welder.
VR training can help students like Shayna repeatedly practice specific skills.
Virtual reality definitely helps because the more muscle memory that you have, the smoother your weld is.
Explore more stories like Shayna's at meta.com/metaverseimpact.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job! Just
hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. And Alex, our old pal Lee Corso probably is not having a good one, given that his alma mater is on the outside looking in of the college football playoff. It is the post-playoff New Year's Six announcement hurry up, as we usually do Sunday late afternoon-ish when the bowls are all released. Alex, quickly, before we get into it, Fiesta, Oregon and Liberty, Orange, Florida State and Georgia, obviously we'll come back to it, Peach, Penn State and Ole Miss, Cotton, Ohio State, and Missouri. The rest of the bowls, the rest of the 40-ish bowls, certainly will trickle in throughout the day. But of course, Sugar Bowl, Washington and Texas, Rose Bowl, Michigan and Alabama, those are your semifinals. I will give you the floor, good sir, because you have stood on business all season and you win the day.
You know, it's funny. I guess I win the day with you and Godfrey because I laughed at you 2 months ago when you suggested that there was a way that a 12-1 SEC champion would get left out. So I will take the chance to laugh at you at some point. But I also, as it got closer and as the scenario was actually starting to develop, didn't think they would actually do it. Maybe I should have held strong on the principle that they never would leave out a 12-1 SEC champion, because the way that it was actually unfolding, I really did not think that they had the stones to do this, and they did. And I want to be clear that I'm not praising them for it. I didn't think they had the guts, and I wish they didn't have the guts, because I think it is a rotten Pandora's box to open for college football. And yeah, they succeeded. They made the Florida State University Seminoles sympathetic figures, a feat probably never achieved and maybe never achieved again.
That is a very good point. They have done the unthinkable, I will say.
Yeah, so let's talk about it kind of seed by seed here, and the way that they came to this, and where I think it starts to diverge from what should have been reality. Michigan and Washington at 1-2. I would not have had a problem with Washington being one. And
I was going to ask you, where do you fall on that quickly?
Not passionate, because as a matter of one versus two, it just doesn't, especially given the way that they wound up treating 3 and 4, it just doesn't really matter. I think that if I were ranking the teams, Washington would have been one and Michigan would have been two. But I knew that that wouldn't be the case, because Michigan was ahead of them last week and then handled business the way that they handled business against Iowa, the way that everyone knew they would handle business against Iowa. Obviously, some combination of Michigan and Washington being 1 and 2. Pretty much indisputable. I don't believe anybody has been arguing against that I've seen. Texas at 3, also obvious in my opinion. They, you know, the committee did not do the one galling thing to me. They did the other. But jumping Alabama over Texas would have been such a slap in the face to the idea of games mattering at all, that was the thing they still just didn't have the guts to do. And I'm glad they didn't, not that it's going to save us given where we're going next.
Right. So I was at the SEC championship game, and yesterday when after the game was over and you're chopping it up with the Alabama folks and the Georgia folks, where I ended up landing on it was this. I did think plausibly that they could do what they did, which is put them both in Texas and Alabama. I did not think plausibly that you could put in Alabama, but not Texas. Right.
Right.
They could. But I did think you. Yeah. Right. But I did think you could put both in and say, all right, split the baby that way. Obviously, Georgia ends up ranked sixth, and we know who ends up ranked fifth, Florida State. Neither of us think it's a good thing. I think it's ridiculous, frankly, that Florida State is not in the college football playoff field. I understand that they clunked to the finish against Florida and they clunked to the finish against Louisville. But at the end of the day, there is precedent for putting in a college football playoff team that is on its backup quarterback. And I know people are going to scream about the fact that Ohio State is a significantly different case because Ohio State beat Wisconsin 59-0 in that Big Ten championship game. And Florida State held on and did not exactly, you know, blow Louisville out by 60 points last night. I don't really care, because at some point in time, defense is a part of football, and you do have to give plaudits to Florida State's defense for taking care of business the last 2 weeks and really not giving much hope that their opponents were going to score in a significant fashion and playing complementary football and being the reason that Florida State won both of those games against Louisville and Florida. Personally, I feel absolutely gutted for Jordan Travis. Jordan Travis tweeted after the announcement came down, verbatim, "I wish I had broken my leg earlier in the season," because the stated reasons from the committee and from the talking heads were that Florida State is a significantly different team without Jordan Travis, a significantly worse team without Jordan Travis, and therefore do not get in. So Jordan Travis today, and I understand he's processing this disappointing decision and this difficult decision, but Jordan Travis right now is in some way, shape, or form being made to feel that he is the reason Florida State is not in the college football playoff field. And just as like a human being one-to-one, that is absolutely terrible to me.
It's rotten. And I think it arguably gets worse. Mike Norvell, in his pre-written, canned, but very accurate statement, made another point about the incentives here. Should they have just held out a senior on senior day? Should teams hold out their good players on senior day or on games at the end of the season when it's not likely that they're going to lose? Florida State wasn't going to lose to North Alabama, but maybe they should, because if you're going to have your quarterback get hurt and it's going to be held against you in this way, maybe it wasn't worth it to let Jordan Travis have senior day in Doak at the very end of the season. Maybe, just maybe, Florida State should have lied about the significance of Jordan Travis's injury and claimed he was day-to-day or week-to-week, and maybe they should have just not been forthright about how serious it was to create some question in the committee's mind. That would obviously be its own disaster in a lot of different ways, including that it would create a gambling and inside information possible criminal angle to things, which I know people in college sports have started to take much more seriously over the last few years. You're opening up a can of worms here that, even aside from the competitive situation of winning games should be what matters, nobody can be happy that this is opened up. And it is an explicit message that it has been opened up. Like, you'd be foolish if you're a team in Florida State's position in the next couple of years, granted that would be on the border between 12 and 13 rather than 3 and 4, not to take these things into account. Yes, the committee has been explicit that they can take this into account. Yes, they've been explicit last week more than ever. In retrospect, Bill Hancock was kind of the canary in the coal mine when he was really being clear, most deserving is not in our lexicon. It's about best. But they have lied about that before. They have lied about the difference between picking the team that would be favored on a neutral field and picking the team with the best resume time and time and time again. And it's weird to me that they chose to stand on procedure this time, at this moment, right now, when what was at stake. And I'm not going to conspirize whatever the word is in the way that many will. That the way the economics work here is not that the committee members get paid more if the SEC gets into the playoff, but I think that there was something in some brains that broke, which is that if this league doesn't have a team in, then we must somehow not be doing our jobs right. And I mean, well, they didn't do them right.
Yeah. And so I actually was in both press conferences last night. So Kirby Smart and Nick Saban. And the SEC gets away with some circular reasoning is circular here, right? Because it's, we're really good. We're Georgia. We're really good. And Alabama beat us. So because we're Georgia, we're still really good. Eye test put us in, which is what Kirby said. And then if you're Saban, obviously Saban doing his politicking, you know, we beat the number one team in the country. They're really good. Put us in, da, 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 da. If you want to do the injury thing, Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey hadn't practiced in 15 days and were not 100% yesterday. If you want to do the injury thing, Kool-Aid McKinstry and Dallas Turner didn't play the whole second. Like, if you want to do the injury thing, you can do the injury thing until you're blue in the face, right? You can keep doing that. Keep doing that, which is why I don't love that we went down that road here. I really don't love that. It is, it's just hard for me to fathom. Because, again, what the I think personally the most disingenuous thing is Greg Byrne, Alabama's athletic director. When Greg Byrne comes out last night and says, oh, well, we should have scheduled a group of five team instead of scheduling Texas, which, save it, man. The reason you scheduled Texas is because you and I both know that your fans are tired of A, traveling to neutral site games to open the season, and B, playing those crap group of five opponents early in the season. The loss against Texas was not like Texas fluked their way into that game, right? This was not a field goal at the end. Texas mashed your ass and held the ball for 7 minutes in your home stadium to win that game definitively. To me, that is not a result you can throw out. And I understand that Alabama is a better team, in my opinion, probably, than the Alabama team that I saw in person at Bryant-Denny Stadium that Saturday night. But the 4th-and-31 thing just happened. That was 2 weeks ago. You needed an absolute prayer to beat a 6-6 team that had just lost to New Mexico State. Like, this is where I get into the, like, what are we doing here kind of thing with Florida State. I just, it really gets me. Yeah. If Florida State had one loss, okay. All right. Yeah. If Florida State had one loss, all right. I got you. But, like, they're an undefeated team that it's not like, it's not like they play in the MAC, man.
Nope.
Like, I understand the ACC is not what the SEC is, but, like,
I agree. It doesn't really compel me that the ACC had a good record in conference versus conference games this year. That's not my point. I agree the ACC is a lesser league than the SEC, even in this down version of the SEC. And if Florida State had lost a game, they lost a game. But to your point about Alabama not being penalized for getting here because Hugh Freeze and Ron Roberts don't understand how to use a quarterback spy on a 4th-and-31 with the game on the line, Alabama gets away with that when we're talking about best, about the, you know, the team that looks the most solid, which is apparently the criteria that's used to box out the team with the backup quarterback. They get away with that, but Florida State can't get away with only winning by 9 or 10 in a pouring rain against a top 15 Louisville team that won 10 games this year. And Florida State can't get away with having to slug one out on the road in the swamp against a decently recruited, if underachieving, Billy Napier team that's not much worse, if worse at all, than Auburn. Like, we are grading on two very different curves here, and I'm not sure why Alabama needs to be a charity case.
And by the way, Alex, the notion that you pick the field based on what the field is going to do in the tournament is not how we pick the tournament.
They don't do it.
It's not how they pick the NCAA tournament. It's not how they pick this thing. Or guess what? They wouldn't have put Cincinnati in 3 years ago.
Well, that's an interesting thing. It's an interesting thing because, again, they say that is – they don't say it explicitly, but they allude to it that's how they're going to do it, that they're going to pick the theoretical best instead of the best that have proven it, that it's not resume. It's what they think of your quality. A shorter version of that is who would be favored on a neutral field? I think Booger McFarland on the Selection Show had it exactly right, that this sport is not supposed to be a beauty pageant, and they are –
but it has to be – because we do committee, at some point in time, it has to be. We understand
that. Agreed. And there's been a line of demarcation between, you know, where you can do that and where you can't, which is that we understand that it's a lower level of play outside of those five conferences. It just is. And that's why it was so hard for UCF. That's why Cincinnati needed some things to go right. I understand that. And I have not a huge amount of beef with that in the kind of conceptual space that it's existed. But to do it this way when Florida State, by the way, like Florida State played LSU and they beat them. Like Alabama wasn't the only team that decided to take a swing in non-conference this year. It's just that Alabama lost that game and Florida State didn't, and they didn't lose any other games. And
it wasn't a fluke against LSU either.
Nope.
For Florida State.
No, it wasn't. It just feels like benefit of the doubt that nobody gets.
I mean, hell, that's a common opponent. By the way, we're ignoring the fact that that's a common opponent.
And
Florida State dispensed with that LSU.
And the Heisman contending quarterback didn't get hurt in the second half of the game against Florida State either. They had to beat him healthy the entire game. I mean, it is so charitable to Alabama. I also think that, you know, there are just so many cases, if you go line by line, almost year by year, where the team that on Selection Sunday you might have thought was one of the best four didn't get in just because they had that blemish that someone else didn't, and that kept them out. I mean, we're talking about any number of different Ohio State teams. You remember the Ohio State team in 2018 that took that 49 points given up loss to Purdue, and so they're 12-1 after they win the Big Ten. Notre Dame was 12-0 that year with a schedule that was nothing like what Ohio State's schedule had been. And guess what? Notre Dame made the playoff because they didn't lose any games. The last year, Alabama has two losses, right? Nick Saban politics and says, we should get in. No, you didn't, because TCU had one loss. They'd only lost one game. And even though, yeah, most people would have favored Alabama on a neutral field against TCU, there was an acknowledgement, even if it wasn't said, and even if they claimed to pick the best and not the most deserving, that what happens on the field matters. And I think the reason that this is a dark day for the sport is that, dark day for the sport. It sounds dramatic when you say it, but I think it is.
No,
it's that this is the most explicit statement ever that there are more important things than winning and losing for the sake of competitive evaluation of power conference football teams. And that sucks. I also think it says something about how they're going to view the ACC going forward as well.
It doesn't mean that I'm not jacked about the Rose Bowl. Like, Alabama and Michigan playing, awesome. Can't wait. Going to be there. Going to be a hell of a football game. It doesn't mean that I'm not excited about that. It's a hard pill for me to swallow that Florida State isn't in the dance with what they did this season. It just is.
Yeah, I think that it very much should be. And I also think that the aftermath of this is going to be destabilizing in its own way. Like, everyone is aware of how much Florida State has been saber-rattling, agitating about the Atlantic Coast Conference and how it is not a fit for them, how they are not treated fairly there economically, and how they need to consider other options. You don't think this is going to hasten that process and cause further destabilization for another, 14 to 28 schools, depending on how widely it goes? I think that's ridiculous. I think it's very naive.
Well, I to be honest with you, I actually wonder if – because if I'm Florida State – of the reasons that they want to leave, I actually don't know that this is one, because theoretically you have a clearer path to a 12 team dance and a bye because you're in this league, right? Because you
but
can
no at large path essentially
win this league.
Essentially what's being said is that if you don't win the ACC, fuck it, because all the at large spots are going to go to the Big Ten and the SEC going forward.
I don't like Florida State would be in a 12 team.
Well, this year, yes. No, of course. But they are, I think that at the same time, it is a clear note that you are a second class citizen as long as you are not in one of those two conferences, and you are always going to be fighting that. You might be right that they might see the path there as being viable because they can win the league and get in. But I think that this is going to result in Florida State looking more seriously at how to break out of the ACC. I mean, they've been trying to do it. I mean, they were talking to private equity people, Sportico reported in August. I made a joke, and it was just a joke that they're already on a plane to some private, to like a sovereign wealth fund to go and negotiate with some rich people about how to get money to survive independently. But it was a joke, but it wasn't a joke. I think they're absolutely going to be looking into that even more seriously than they were.
I don't think either we've heard the last of specific Florida State saber rattling towards the College Football Playoff Committee. I don't think they're going to go quietly into that good night. All right, the games that we have themselves, Alex, let's start with the Sugar Bowl, Washington and Texas. Washington is, again, an underdog. They come into this game as a 4.5-point underdog to Texas. Knee-jerk, because that's what we're doing, knee-jerk. It's 3:30 in the afternoon.
It's a lot of points. It's a lot of points, in this game. 4.5.
We'll see. Yeah. I like my big thing in this game is Michael Penix against interior pass rush from Texas, Byron Murphy to Tamondre Sweat. That is, for me, before I really dig into it deep, that's the thing that off the top of my head jumps out as the thing that I am really, really interested to see in how Washington deals with that. The other thing, Alex, and Ryan Day proved this out last year, if you give these really good play callers a month to cook something up, you never know what might happen. And if you give Sark a month to cook something up.
And Ryan Grubb.
If you give Sark a month to cook something up, I believe quite strongly in Steve Sarkisian. Quite strongly.
Richard, I think I said this after Washington survived Corvallis, but I am done doing the it's going to catch up with them thing with Washington.
To Washington.
Yeah, and I'm done with it even more after doing it again to Oregon in that game. And the thing that I had thought might catch up to them is what we talked about from the beginning of the year. Line depth on offense, ability to smash and run the ball. They have figured some of that out as the season's gone on. I mean, I don't think that they're going to win the Joe Moore Award, but they have given Michael Penix some time. Dylan Johnson has run for, I don't know how many yards, and not in front of me because we deal with fewer notes on the Sunday hurry up after the playoff, but like a lot. They've figured out a running game. They figured out pass pro pretty well. You would think, right, that with Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy, this would be the moment that that particular thing would catch up with them. But all bets are off. There's only two games left, and they have managed to make it work all season. So why can't they make it work for one or two more weeks?
Texas on offense, like, so no Jonathan. By the way, banner day yesterday for involving your injured star players in the conference championship thing. Like Michigan, Zach Zinner got handed the trophy.
Yeah.
Jordan Travis was up on the podium and on the sideline yesterday for Florida State. And at the end of the game, Jonathan Brooks suited up and was in the game at the end when Texas victory formation against Oklahoma State. I thought that was a really cool thing that Steve Sarkisian did. So Texas comes into this game with an offense that obviously they won't have Jonathan Brooks for this game. How they manage this game, I think, will be interesting because Texas is built to win a track meet. But does that with Washington, but does that mean you want to get in a track meet with Washington, right? Like, do you want to try to play keep away? Do you want to try to keep Michael Penix on the bench? Do you want to try to not expose your secondary to those three NFL receivers, which, by the way, I don't think that's going to go very well for Texas, even though the freshman corner, whose name now escapes me, unfortunately, but I think has been playing pretty well for them.
Yeah.
So how this is going to go for Texas is going to be fascinating.
Yeah, I think Texas is secondary, as you sort of saw with a reduced, not what he is now, Jalen Milroe back at the beginning of the year, is gettable. And I think that as you go and play Michael Penix in this game, and as you stare down the possibility of playing, you know, a vastly improved from when he was Milroe in the next game, if you win, or conceivably a JJ McCarthy, if you win, I think that is the question mark for Texas. Like, I'm not worried, you know, Jonathan Brooks, it's awful that he's not able to play except for in victory formation, but like Texas is going to score points. I think there's pretty much nothing that could befall Texas at this point other than a Quinn Ewers injury that would prevent them from putting points on the board. So Washington is going to have to do that as well. Like, I think that it might be track meety no matter what arc of the game Texas pursues, just because I think they're going to score a lot of points.
Yeah, and by the way, here's your Washington's defense has a chance to continue to really – I mean, you know, Oregon scored – I don't want to say only scored 30 points on Friday night, but like Oregon scored 31 points. They were able to get stops, right? When you have two teams with two great offenses, it becomes a notion of that like getting stops basketball defense variety of defensive theme. And I think that is probably what will end up happening in this game. The Rose Bowl is a little bit of a different story.
Yeah.
But I think the defenses in this game, in the Sugar Bowl, have an interesting challenge where that's concerned.
Yeah, on the Rose Bowl, I'm excited. I think it'll be my first Rose Bowl attended. Very excited. Excited to see you there probably as well. I think we're going to have a great time. It's cool that Michigan is in the Rose Bowl this year. This is the last year of the Rose Bowl in its kind of current perch in the sport before things change up a little bit in the 12-team playoff. I'm a sucker for this kind of thing. I think it's cool that the team that won the first Rose Bowl is playing in that game. And I have no doubt that it's going to be an incredible atmosphere. Also nice when there's a color clash of the,
color clashes on both games.
It'll look very good from the sky when they come down and they show Pasadena from overhead. Going to be a slugfest. Not going to be for the faint of heart.
Nick Saban has beaten the allegations. Nick Saban has beaten them. Whether they win this game or not, man, the fact that they're in it, the dubious means by which they are in it, we have already discussed. But the fact that they are in it means we're going to talk about them because they're in it. And yesterday I thought was interesting in that Saban after the game said, they came out in the beginning of the game and said, we're going to defend Georgia with single high coverage, one safety back. And then Georgia marched down the field in that first possession. And they were like, well, we're throwing that baby out with the bathwater. And they basically played split safety coverage, two safeties back the rest of the game. Now, when you play two safeties back, that means you have less bodies close to the line of scrimmage. Theoretically, you can run the ball on relatively lighter boxes. But Alabama's defensive front stood tall the entire afternoon. Georgia ran for like 80 yards yesterday. I mean, they were not able to run the ball in this game at all. And Alabama was
Nor
able
was
to
Alabama,
mostly.
Really?
Yes.
Unless it
yes.
was Jalen. Yeah.
Alabama was mostly able to keep the lid on Georgia's passing game. Now, yeah, some of that has to do with the fact that Ladd McConkey was hurt and Brock Bowers were hurt, not at 100%. But the point is still well taken about how Alabama was able to switch their game plan on defense midstream with great effectiveness. I also thought they did that on offense too, by the way. I think they got into a mode about halfway through the first quarter and the beginning of the second quarter where they were like, Jalen, brother, ball's in your hands, run it a little bit more, go a little bit more. And he was able to execute that, obviously, to the degree that they were able to win that game yesterday. So is Michigan able to assert, this is the test for Michigan, right? You've now been in this spot three times. Against Georgia, you go into a semifinal where, you know, you've got to assert your manhood against an NFL front that is serious. They were obviously unable to do it. Last year, you go into that game talking cash shit about how we're going to run over this TCU team.
Bring the Big 10 to the Big 12.
3-3-5, they can't stand up, and you were unable to figure out their angles of pursuit the entire day for the most part. So now you've got a similar challenge to 2021 Georgia, where you've got Alabama, you've got the firm, you've got what they represent from a physicality standpoint up against it. Michigan is a 2.5-point favorite, I believe. I think it's probably down to 2 now. It's gotten pelted by yours truly already to move a little bit more towards the Bama side. We'll see where it settles by the time we kick the actual game off. But man, there will be a dialogue to be had if Michigan loses this game, by the way, that Michigan can get there but not get over the hump. There will be a significant hump if Alabama is able to put, I don't want to say pull this off as in it's a massive upset, but if Alabama is able to win this game.
Yeah, Richard, the thing that I worry about from Michigan in this game is Dallas Turner specifically and his relationship vis-a-vis Michigan's tackles. And I think that like Texas would have been a better matchup for Michigan, though. Actually, I don't know if that's true now that Zach Zinter is hurt. But like Michigan's interior of the line seems as well suited as anybody to deal with, like, for instance, Sweat and Murphy for Texas. How sure are we that JJ McCarthy is not going to be under immense duress from Dallas Turner and Chris Braswell, like, for the whole of this game? That would be my fear. That'd be my fear for Michigan. It's those tackles, specifically against those two guys.
Here's what I'm concerned with Michigan in the passing game, by the way. We're going to find out about those Michigan wide receivers. We're going to find out how good those guys really are. We didn't have to against Penn State. The Ohio State game kind of went the way it did. It was a big Colston Loveland game. You saw how Michigan handled how Alabama handled Brock Bowers yesterday. But those Michigan wide receivers against Kool-Aid McKinstry, Caleb Downs, how
Malachi Moore in the area. Yeah.
how they're able to that to me is the biggest matchup, because if I'm Alabama, I make JJ McCarthy stand on his head, because there's no airspace with those wide receivers. It's not open. It's JJ, you got to throw it open. It's JJ, you've got to thread the needle. You saw in that Ohio State game, the throw from that Ohio State game, you know the one I'm talking about, where you were like, all right, JJ, that's the one throw in that game that I like stood out of my chair and I was like, all right, that's a Sunday throw from JJ McCarthy. He's going to have those, because I don't think Alabama is going to, we're not going to be running around scot-free in quarantine on the back end of Alabama secondary in this game. I do not think that is going to happen.
Nope. Tend to agree. I'm incredibly excited for the Rose Bowl. Holding that in my head at the same time that I think it's a travesty that this is the matchup. I mean, I guess this is, we're college football fans, so we're very well practiced in cognitive dissonance in general, and enjoying this playoff will just be kind of a chance to flex that muscle.
Real quick, Alex, we have four teams in the playoff who can win the playoff. Do you agree?
Yes, I would agree. And that's yes, and I do not mean to give credit to the committee for that. Like, I don't believe that Florida State.
Yes,
I want to be clear about this. I don't think that Florida State had any chance to win the playoff without Jordan Travis. And I hold it in my head at the same time that it is not right that they did not get a chance to prove that wrong. I think that's messed up. And that's what we're losing here.
I think I may have said this. Like, I did not think Florida State with Jordan Travis was going to win a game in the playoff.
The thing is, it's like, imagine if Iowa had some explosiveness on offense. Like, imagine, like, it's like, it's even without Jordan Travis, it's Iowa with two NFL receivers on either side of the field. Is it not? No, but like,
it's not.
It's that good. Like, it's like, obviously, it's a tremendous defense. And it's an offense that even without Jordan Travis, like, is going to move it a bit, because you can just throw it up to Johnny Wilson and Keon Coleman and you're going to move the ball a bit. Also, the FSU defense, I mean, was close to Iowa level.
Good.
Like, really, really good. I mean, you saw it last night against Louisville.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. The rapid spin through the rest of the New Year's Six. I should probably bring up the New Year's Six on my computer. Do you have it up?
I had it up, but I thought you were our guy who has it up. Let's start with Oregon against Liberty. So Liberty jumps ahead of
the Libs.
I think the previously unranked SMU, but obviously jumps ahead of Tulane, which loses to SMU in the American Athletic Championship game. Liberty is, I think, the deserving team for this spot, given the way the committee operates. I would have taken Troy over them. I think Troy is the best Group of Five team. Period. Like, I even including James Madison, which isn't eligible, I think Troy is the best team. Troy lost two games and Liberty didn't lose any games. And there was not a one loss Group of Five champ from another league. So I understand why we are going to have Liberty in this game. Weird that Liberty gets the benefit of convention when certain other teams did not get the benefit of convention this week. But Liberty gets in. Could be trouble for Oregon if Oregon is not taking the game seriously that's not the nice way to put it. But like, if Bo Nix doesn't play and if Oregon doesn't have the full complement in this game, we have seen the G5 team win this game before numerous times, including last year when Tulane got USC.
That is the fiesta. I'm interested in how well like Liberty travels for this. I think it's just going to be a fascinating subplot. How many folks they have out there for this game in the desert. The Cotton Bowl, Missouri and Ohio State. Eli Drinkwitz, I think, has already made a Connor Stallions joke, apparently. Cannot wait to see what that is, but that's a text message that just came in from a friend of mine. This is really interesting. Mizzou and Ohio State is a really, really interesting matchup, and I think it could – look, do we think number 18 is going to play in this game?
Probably not, but I don't know. Would you?
That is the thing that I think fundamentally changes it. If they don't have Emeka Buka, if they don't have Marvin Harrison, it's going to take some wind out of the sails. Nobody on this podcast has any issue with players sitting out of non-playoff bowl games, but it will change the tenor of the game. Missouri has got to be the Missouri's the happy to be here team, right? Like, Missouri's the team that's like, they can put their back into this one.
Yeah, I think Missouri has a chance to take a really, really good season, a great season, and make it a degree greater by capping it off with a win like this. You know, it's their second crack at a giant. They had one at Georgia and couldn't quite get it done, but gave it a better run than anybody else had until Saturday. So, yeah, they're going to be very excited to be in this game, and I look forward to I think it's a good matchup. I look forward to watching Missouri's group of receivers again, if they play. I mean, you mentioned Marvin Harrison against the Ohio State secondary. I think that is a power-on-power kind of matchup. The Peach Bowl, Richard, is Penn State and Ole Miss. This one, less exciting to me personally. Like, to watch the Penn State offense play again this year, with I don't really have to do that, but I will. I mean,
Ole Miss is going to come into it, and yeah, this is going to be an opt-out thing with who opts out of Penn State's defense. We'll get to it when we get to it. You know, I do think this is a game where, like, Ole Miss's offense comes in, and then you realize, like, oh, they're not in the weight class without, like, a good defense, similar to what happened against Georgia a few weeks ago for them. Speaking of Georgia, the sixth of the New Year's six games, Georgia and Florida State, well, there was a time yesterday around 4 p.m. when I thought this was going to happen in a playoff game, but it is happening in the Orange Bowl. Man, this is the game where neither of these teams want to be here, like, at all.
You see, if you're Florida State, I think maybe you play. I think this is a chance for Florida State to beat Georgia, because Florida State honestly could come out playing pretty inspired in this game, and then if they win, just be like, fuck y'all. And I don't think they would hang a banner, because that would make them too much like UCF, and that would be embarrassing to them. But
no, they're above that.
But they are going to try to prove – could be trying to prove a point in this game. I think if – I love a little bowl psychoanalysis. Like, I mean, what's better than getting the chance to try to step inside the heads of some 19-year-olds you don't know? And I think that these guys are going to be motivated to show the world.
All right, some ads before we get out of here. First and foremost, on the Substack, we understand that there are some folks who have had an issue with payment implementation on the Substack, splitzoneduo.com.
Yes, a small group, I think it's about 12 or 13% of our subscribers, had cards being like, hey, you guys are suspicious. You know, new business stuff. We're liberal arts majors. This is the first time we've ever had to use Stripe by ourselves. We have been told by Substack that if you just use a different card, that should be fine if you are in that small group of subscribers. So thank you in advance for bearing with that. We are getting the hang of using a payment processor, and hopefully all will be, and we expect that all will be smooth sailing going forward. Alabama fans, Michigan fans, Washington fans, Texas fans, and anyone in the greater Houston or Texas area. That's a pretty wide geographic net. We would love to see you on January 6th for Split Zone Duo Live in Houston, brought to you by our dear partners at Home Field Apparel. You already know a lot about Home Field. You can go to Home Field's website, homefieldapparel.com, and get 20% off your first order using the promo code SCD20. That's SCB20. But Home Field is going to be all over the place at this event. There will be shirts. There will be fun. There will be prizes. There will be bar tabs. There will be very enjoyable things for all. Brought to you by our longest standing, our dear partners at Home Field Apparel. They're going to be with us January 6th. We're reclaiming it in Houston, Texas. SplitzoneDuoLive.com for tickets.
All righty, Alex. We've come to our end here. This is the last hurry up of any style until September, man. I am going to miss spending my Sundays in one way, shape, or form or another with you, my good friend. We're all going to have a little downtime here. We're not going away, but we're going to have a little downtime as far as college football stuff. We got Army Navy on Saturday, Heisman, etc. But besides that, we go full systems, go into the bowl slate.
We will also talk this week some very exciting games in the FCS playoffs and in the lower level playoffs beyond that this weekend. I had a great time watching Idaho narrowly escape Southern Illinois in the Kibbe Dome late last night. North Dakota State came very, very close to getting eliminated very, very early on in the FCS bracket themselves. So we will be talking about that during the lull in FBS football during December, no question. And just looking forward to finishing strong, finishing the drill. Let's do it.
Second annual Splitty D's this week. Bring your best.